It doesn't matter who you are or what you have, life can be pretty damn hard. Without a healthy mind, it's even harder. Check out online therapy with betterhelp.com/Duncan and be on your way to a little more ease. That's betterhelp.com/Duncan. Greetings, friends. It's me, Duncan, and we're going to start this podcast off with what your dog is actually saying when he barks. Here we go. Okay, so there's the sound of your dog barking. Now we'll just run that through a quantum refabrication tubule. And let's hear what your dog's saying to you.
If with mindfulness is rope, the elephant of mind is gathered all around, our fears will come to nothing. Every virtue drop into our hands. Tigers, lions, elephants and bears, snakes and every hostile foe, those who guard the prisoners in hell, ghosts and ghouls and every evil wraith, by simple binding of this mind alone, all these things are likewise bound. By simple taming of this mind alone, all these things are likewise tamed. For all anxiety and fear, and pain in boundless quantity, their source and wellspring is the mind itself, as he who spoke the truth declared.
Bad news for you, it appears that your little pup has plagiarized Way of the Bodhisattva by Shanti Deva and is quoting from that beautiful text without crediting the author. And that means we're going to have to vaporize your dog. Here we go. Gonna miss that little pup.
He vaporized my dog and rode away on his horse of gray. I really love that dog. What can I say? His dog's been vaporized. And I guess I shouldn't mind. After all, the dog did plagiarize. I'm gonna miss licking that dog's.
And that was He Vaporized My Dog by Clint French. I want to thank Magnolia Sterling for giving me the rights to that song, In Perpetuity. Also, a big thank you to Danielle Tremone, Galax Norway, Imahome Compson, and the Candy Sisters over in Black Mountain for your help in getting that off the vinyl into my computer. And, of course, to Red Star Recording and the Three North Winds, who are the folks who managed to do the EQ on that, on top of what my editor Aaron has already done. And again, the excavator folks who managed to unearth the vinyl from the cemetery where it was in the casket of Clint French really needed your help. You came through in a bind. It's so hard to get excavators to dig up cemeteries after working hours these days because of COVID. So a big thank you to them for getting that thing above ground where it belongs. And most importantly, a big thank you to Daryl Engelson, the producer, and the Wakonski Corporation, as well as Avel Kellenor, the Phoenix Man, and his Dream Legion of Saints, for blessing the album and for producing the portal through which that music can and will forever come from that realm that was and will be again and is, if only you have the courage to get into your heart and experience reality from that precious soul place instead of the confusing, maggot-ridden vortex of materialist rot that so many people find themselves manacled to. Not by anyone's fault, but their own. We've got a wonderful podcast for you today. David Nickturn is here with us. He's my meditation teacher, and it's going to get deep. We'll jump right into it, but first, this. Doesn't it seem like the world's against us from getting a good night's sleep this year? I don't know about you, but the poachers that have been going into the swamp near my familial manor continue to desecrate the ancient burial grounds that were there long before my family moved into the area, and they shriek at the moon and make horrible, blasphemous, disgusting utterances all night long. But when you have a purple mattress, you can sleep cool and comfortable no matter what the world throws at you. That's because only purple mattresses have the grid. Its unique ventilated design allows air to flow through to help you sleep cool, even when it feels like 1,000 degrees out, even when the horrific shrieks of the blasphemous desecrators in your familial swamp are howling as they shake their cursed loins at that dreadful moon. And the grid is amazingly supportive for your back and legs while cushioning your shoulders, neck, and hips, no matter how you sleep, even if you curl up in the fetal position and tremble. Unlike memory foam, which remembers everything, the grid bounces back as you move and shift, so you never get that I'm stuck feeling you do with memory foam, which is very similar to when you go out into the swamp to try to clear the poachers out and find yourself up to your waist in stinking quicksand. Purple is amazing. I have a glorious purple pillow, and I know many of us have been disappointed by mattress mongers who went nuts over the last year, so this isn't that kind of thing. It's actually amazing. It feels like it's made out of some kind of stuff that fell out of one of those tic-tac UFOs that everybody's filming these days. It's futuristic and you'll love it, and I wouldn't lead you astray. Their pillow is incredible, their mattress is amazing, and you can try it completely risk-free with free shipping and returns. Financing is available too. Purple, it's comfort reinvented. Right now, you'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. Go to purple.com/trussle10 and use promo code trussle10. That's purple.com/trussle10, promo code trussle10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/trussle10, promo code trussle10. Terms apply. Thanks, Purple. And we're back. You know, I love my Patreon family, and I'd like to invite you to join us. Every week, we gather together for a meditation and what's called our family gathering. And you never know what's going to happen. But I'll tell you what happened today on this precious, sacred day. We hatched a plan to create a book of erotic, absurd short stories. And we're going to have that to you by Halloween. At least that's our goal. You could even participate if you wanted to just by going to patreon.com/DTFH. Sign up. You're going to get commercial-free episodes of the DTFH. You're also going to get access to our Discord server. And if you want it bad enough, you can hang out with us in person on video every Monday and Friday. And we're also going to have a couple of meetings as we evolve our erotic short stories for this book that will be released on Amazon. And we're already planning on that. So if you don't want to join the Patreon, at least you'll be able to pick up a book of erotic short stories, many of them having to do with various cryptids, including the Loch Ness Monster, at least based on what happened in our family gathering today. That's patreon.com/DTFH. And now the podcast. Today's guest, David Nickturn, is a meditation teacher. He teaches mindfulness meditation. He's amazing. And he's got a free meditation teacher training coming up. And I am going to be doing, I guess you could say, a live podcast with him on September 22nd from 6 to 7 p.m. All the links you need to get to that will be at DougAtrussell.com, or you can go to dharmamoon.com/info-session. Also, David's written some pretty awesome books, including Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck, and Awakening for the Daydream. If you're interested in Buddhism, if you're interested in meditation, these are excellent books for you. But don't go reading them yet. Listen to this episode of the DTFH with the great David Nickturn.
Welcome, welcome all of you. Glad you are with us. Shake hands, no need to be blue. Welcome to you.
David, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for coming back on.
My pleasure.
Now, let's just dive into it. The last time you were on, we talked about enlightenment. I think we put the cart before the horse is my question, because, and it leads actually to the actual question, which is maybe you can clarify something that has confused the shit out of me on and off ever since I read it. Or maybe I heard him say it. What did Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche mean when he said that confusion is a quality of enlightenment or a condition of enlightenment or on the continuum of enlightenment? I just don't understand that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The basic premise that I think you're pointing to is what's called co-emergence. That the enlightened possibility co-emerges with the confused possibility. And they're really two different, perspectives on addressing the exact same situation.
Okay.
And they co-arise. So in a kind of certain perspective, you're not trying to get rid of the confusion, but you're trying to see the enlightened possibilities within it.
Okay. I think I
the intelligence in it.
Okay, so I'll just create an example. You're in a hurry to get somewhere, really important job interview. You get rear-ended by somebody who's looking at their phone. You're pissed. You're probably not going to get the job because of this. You got to stop because your car got screwed up. You get out of the car, and is this the moment where you have a decision to make between, like, being angry and telling them to fuck off or dealing with it in some civil way? Is that the co-emergent possibilities that you're talking about?
Well, sure. Right in that moment, if you freeze frame it, like your mouth is opening and you're going, right about before you say something, there is a moment, and you do have myriad possibilities in that moment. Now, once your karma kicks in and you initiate a habitual response to the situation,
shoot them.
Whatever happens next is going to be a cascading, rippling, an unconscious kind of process.
Okay. So let's talk about that moment before the karma kicks in.
Yeah. It's the moment between the last moment and the next moment. Called the fourth moment.
So that's actually what it's called?
Yeah, the fourth time. And I'll tell you why. There's the past, clearly, right?
Okay. Yep.
There's the future. Those are easy to kind of wrap your mind around. And then everybody makes a big deal about the present, right?
Yes.
But so where is that?
Well,
it's gone.
Okay.
It's gone.
Okay.
So we call that the fourth moment, the fourth time. It's not even the present.
Wow. So what is it? Does it exist in this universe? Like, what is it?
Yeah, you could argue that it's the only thing that exists in this universe with any kind of substantial existence, because the rest of it very quickly cascades into memory, right? The past is all memory. The future is all anticipation. And the present, if we're chasing it, becomes the past or the future, depending how you shape it. So the fourth moment would be kind of the edge, the razor's edge of actual experience arising in the moment.
Okay. So where is identity in that moment?
There is none.
Okay. So this is before, basically, like, this is the, I don't know, TVs, right? They apparently, like, you know, if you try to film your TV, you see those flashes on it because you're seeing in between the frames, I guess, or I don't know what it is with digital TVs now, but is that what we're talking about here? Is this sort of like you have a timeline. The timeline's your karma. It's all your shit. But then simultaneously existing.
Well, this is a metaphor that you're using, which is frames of film, creates the illusion of continuity, right? We are convinced we're watching continuous experience, but in actual fact, there are 30 frames each second going by. And if you were attuned to it, and your mind was quick enough, you would see the space between the frames.
Right.
As having its own type of non-existent existence, right?
Yeah. Is this like matter and antimatter or something? It's
sort of.
It sounds almost like, even though it's saying a parallel universe implies it's not here, that is kind of what it sounds like. Just this.
Well, it's in the world of seeming continuity, right, which is where we live, called samsara, there's a sense of ongoing experience that's being had by a particular person named Duncan. Blah, blah, blah. When you look for Duncan, of course, his name gets peeled away. His beard gets peeled away. His podcast gets peeled away. His shirt gets peeled away. Then his skin gets peeled away. Then his bones get peeled away. And Duncan kind of doesn't have a fixed identity in that fourth moment. Can you see that?
Yes.
It's not a fixed identity. It's a very rapidly morphing sense of some kind of experience, but hard to say.
So is, to get back to the co-emerging.
Yeah.
Is the, from this perspective, is the Duncan part of the situation considered to be confusion, and the and the fourth moment part considered to be enlightenment, and the two are sort of wrapping around each other to
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, but this is the absolute and the relative truth, which is a very, you know, important Buddhist idea. And then the third truth is the inseparability of the two. So that's a very important one too. You know, when you try to peel out Duncan from the kind of sense of openness, spaciousness, you know, pure awareness, you end up out in space without, you know, without any kind of gravity, without any kind of reference point. And there's something a little bit etheric about that. And when you try to peel that out of the Duncan thing, you end up with a really solid, thick, heavy, dense mess.
Right.
So the mix of the two is where you could probably say the enlightened possibilities lay, is in understanding how they intertwine.
Okay. Okay, I see. So trying to find a thread in there and say, oh, that's the enlightened part and that's the confused part.
Well, they do that and they say samsara and nirvana, right?
But, so nirvana is equated with enlightenment.
Well, nirvana is really equated with the kind of cessation of that confused part. But you could say, depending on which language you're talking, that the enlightened possibility is really the complete, you could say, understanding of the totality of the situation.
Okay.
So like my friend Michael calls it the Mikey show. It's still going on, but it's not, you know, it's not like life and death at that point.
Okay, yeah. Oh, God, what a show.
We all have it, right? You know, and don't you find your meditation practice gives you a little bit of humor about the Duncan show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, that is just an understand. Anytime I find myself doing my show, like one of my great magic tricks, here's a good one. I just did this yesterday. I, for whatever satanic reason, I've decided to get into golf. And so I go to the driving range and I'm hitting balls. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe it's just because, like, if you really want to experience blasphemy, just try to take up golf and get around all those stuffy ass fucking golfers. They all know you don't belong. The fucking guys in the golf shop hate me. They just hate. I don't know what it is, what I did. Maybe it's because I have a beard. I want to get good at golf. I want to become a pro just so when I get the trophy, I can be like, those guys at that fucking golf shop are assholes. Anyway, I guess that's the show too. But here's a favorite trick of mine, which is having hit balls, ripped up this poor driving range, used the wrong clubs. I go home and I find myself saying to Erin, my wife, I'm just really busy right now. Like, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? That's like, and that just pops out. That's not like I plan to say. I'm hearing myself say I'm busy. And I'm like, I just spent like 45 minutes flailing around a driving range. I'm not busy. So that's it, right? That's the story.
That's the abstract watcher that we talk about, the witness kind of thing. You just notice it and you're not really attached to it. You're not going down the rabbit hole with it. You're not judging it secondarily. You're just noticing, I just said that.
Right.
You're not, okay. You know, and you could say it's a little detached in a way, you know,
yes,
but it doesn't mean you have to completely detach from the feeling of it. It just means you become aware of the fact that there's a certain mechanical thing that just happened.
Right. Right.
Autopilot just happened.
Autopilot. Dense. And all that does is it doesn't do anything except spawn anxiety, right? Like that's the idea, is like you're just sort of, you're like some kind of karma caterpillar just spraying out like
dense, weird, neurotic
karma caterpillar.
You know what I mean? Like they spin their cocoon. It's like you're spinning this, like it's, and it's so intricate. It's intricate, and I think it's like, I mean, is it wrong to call it skillful, in the sense that you can just spontaneously like reproduce you could just spontaneously reproduce the conditions that are keeping you bound to a very specific shit frequency. I mean, there's some skill in that, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, that is mindfulness. Is you, instead of being bound into it, you're noticing it. And then the next choice is whether to shift slightly the mood or the tone of it, which is kind of more like the Mahayana practice. Just shift it over a little bit and go, I think I will say something nice to my wife now, for God's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And see what happens when I do that, you know?
But what about why is it so surprisingly difficult to make that shift? Not just with my wife or whatever. It's just like when presented with this like muddled binary, you know, between you being kind to, I don't know, make it like maybe a little too reductive, or being a shithead. Why is it so addicting to be the shithead?
Wow. So that kind of brings us to our topic of the conversation today.
Yeah.
In a way, doesn't it? That was like almost, if this were music, that would have been the prelude.
Yes.
Okay.
Our topic, by the way, today is suffering.
Truth of suffering. So, and it is so fundamental to the Buddhist way of analysis, you know, which is that here's your hero, because you're talking about enlightenment, and this person supposedly attained that particular thing, and maybe is a major archetype or prototype. And he gets enlightened, and for 49 days wanders around the forest without saying a word to anybody. That's the story. Then he meets his old partners, you know, the yogis, you know, who he had studied with. And they ask him, what is his dharma now? Because he looks kind of like relaxed and luminous and kind of somewhat more harmoniously orchestrated than they feel. And so, okay, what's your dharma? And then he proclaims the Four Noble Truths, which is famous in the history of religion. This is as good as it gets. It's the Ten Commandments level of you know, profound utterances by, yeah, you know, special travelers. And the first truth is the truth of the pervasiveness of suffering. And I could just hear the kind of wah, 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 wah in these yogis' minds who've been trying to achieve bliss and heavenly, you know, unobstructed sense of pleasure. And they're looking at each other, and they're looking at him and going like, I think I might have the wrong channel. on this TV set. And then he goes further to explain it. He says what the suffering is and what the cause of it is. So that's the second noble truth. And then the third one is he's saying, you know what, there's a way to really remove the causes of it and conditions of it. And that's going to shift reality around, the way you experience reality. And then the fourth one is here's a pathway to do that, a method, which you and I have talked about before. Last time we were talking about what's the method somebody's applying. And he did go that far out on a limb to say, try this, you know.
Yeah.
So going right back to the beginning in your story and in what we're talking about, what is the nature of the suffering that's being described? And I find it helpful to, there's four different sort of categories of it. And see which ones apply. Okay, the first one is not getting what you want.
Okay.
Second one, getting what you don't want.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a difference. Third one is called the pain of alternation. You get what you want and then you don't. She loves me not, that kind of situation.
Okay.
And that in itself is sort of like unsettling. And the fourth one is a kind of all pervasive or underlying, which means that even when none of those things are explicitly happening, there's a kind of room tone of discomfort.
Okay.
Which I like, you know, you'll understand this analogy. I use the analogy of a ground hum in a recording studio.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's just, as soon as you stop speaking and stop playing music, you're hearing this sound and it's been there the whole time. So those four are based on that. And what it's really saying is our experience is pervaded by those. If you tried to take your sweater, you can't just wash them out and then you have the sweater and you have those things. It's part of the fabric of the sweater.
It's baked in.
Baked in. So that's where we start. If you want to start with the Buddhist version, there's other versions of reality in which there's bliss and unity and, you know, all kinds of good news. I highly recommend them but I'd recommend them for the pessimists in the group, because this is fundamentally more optimistic. It's saying there is a problem, but there's something you can do with it.
Yeah, but so whoever Buddha encounters initially, you're just saying the eyebrow raising part is that they had been kicking around this idea that, look, we can actually find a zone mentally where there is no suffering. Whereas it seems like what he's saying is that zone doesn't exist. There's all pervading suffering. But if you change the way you relate with that suffering,
there are other possibilities.
There's other possibilities. And so they're like, so just to say there is suffering, or the suffering of suffering, or the suffering of getting what you want, or the suffering of not getting what you want, or the suffering of getting what you want and not getting what you want, which is what the people writing like all the social media addiction programs are using to keep you hooked. And then all pervasive suffering, and this flew in the face of this other idea of things. Cause it's almost like he was saying, it's everywhere, man. It's like you, the realm of the gods is going to have suffering everywhere. So it's just the idea that the analysis is one of like, okay, look, you're running away from your, it's not like chasing your tail, it's like running from your tail.
Running from your own tail, that's beautiful.
Okay, cool.
That's so cool. Running from your own tail, that's really funny.
So this is just the realization of like, look, what happens if we stop running away from this thing?
Yeah, and then that puts you in relationship to it where you're examining it, contemplating it, not trying to get around it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, running from your own tail. I got to remember that. I'm going to use that. That's good.
Cool. I'm sure I stole it from something. I'm sure I didn't make that up. I'm sure that came from something. I'm sorry, whoever it came from. So this is...
You think B.B. King made up that lick?
I don't know. But yeah, look, I like this. I love that we're talking about it, because it's something I've been playing around with. You know, when you're in a lot of pain and you get around someone and they try to reanalyze your pain for you. You know what I mean? You get around somebody, you're all fucked up, and they go, but, you know, look on the bright side. There's, you know, somewhere someone's probably getting their face chewed off by a badger, and that's not happening to you. You know, somewhere someone's having a Mountain Dew bottle removed from their rectum, and it's getting
keep going. You're on a run, Duncan. Get five of them, and you win a free trip to Bermuda. I mean, oh.
Somewhere somebody fell into a pit of throwing stars. Look, though, I'm not going to do five, but the point, you get the point. It's like versus where you're feeling the suffering and someone says, yes, yeah, that is, you are suffering. Yes.
Or somebody says, oh, isn't that interesting?
Right. Where it's not trying to revise for you or point out the most obvious bullshit out there, thinking that that's ever made anyone feel better in the history of feeling like shit. No one has been like, oh my God, I didn't think of the badger guy.
Yeah.
You know? The guy getting his face chewed off by a badger, someone would have some other thing. Like, you know, well, the badger doesn't have rabies. It could be worse.
Yeah. I like the history of feeling like shit. That's good.
But yeah, right. Well, So
that's a good title for a book.
The history of feeling like shit. Starting from day one. So it seems like if you're doing that to yourself, you know, if feeling like shit and then coming up with some ridiculous, silly antidote, which is like, well, at least I'm not this or that.
Right.
Then really all you're doing is still running from your tail, right? The idea is like you're feeling this.
Yeah, sure.
Heaviness. And then instead of running away from it, you start sitting with it, contemplating it.
Well, yeah. And you know, we emphasize a couple of key, you know, let's say tools for working with what you're talking about. And one is curious, inquisitive. Like the second noble truth is, what are the causes and conditions that bring that about? That's a really good question. Right. If your car dies on the side of a road and you just have a nervous breakdown, you might want to just think, well, what actually is happening to my car? Maybe the battery is dead. Maybe this happened. Right. Maybe that happened. Maybe I have a flat tire. So the curiosity is one. The second thing is gentleness. And we've talked about that a million times. Why add further aggression to that situation? It's already laced with it. Why add more as an attempt at a solution? I think most of us know that adding aggression almost never is a solution for almost everything.
Right.
Okay. And then the third one might be like a quality of precision. You know, okay, this is going to require a little bit of using Prajna, you know, Prajna sword, the intelligence, you know?
Yes.
Intelligence.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Feels, for supporting this episode of the DTFH. I love Feels CBD. CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel, like stress, anxiety, or pain. CBD is a panacea. I love it. Having problems sleeping, want to relax a little bit after a hardcore workout, or just want to chill out, CBD is the way to go. I was on the precipice of just throwing in my fucking hat and getting addicted to Xanax. That's how bad my insomnia was. But thanks to Feels, I can sleep better. I know I have a wonderful safety parachute in my medicine cabinet, and that is Feels Premium CBD. You just place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. That's right, a few drops of Feels CBD oil under your tongue, and it's just wonderful. You feel it radiating through your whole body. Or if you need a dose of chill on the go, pop one of Feel's new CBD-infused mints for a clear-headed feeling and fresh breath. I love Feel's, so I was thrilled when they sent me a tin of their powerful mints. Wonderful! The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important. Everyone's dose is different. Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. The Feels customer service team is dedicated to making sure you get the best use of your CBD. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy, and you'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/Duncan. You'll get 40% off your first 3 months with free shipping. That's an amazing deal. This is really good CBD. It's feels.com/Duncan to become a member and get 40% automatically taken off your first glorious 3 months with free shipping. Feels.com/Duncan. Thank you so much, Feels. I like that. Why add aggression to this? It's like, why are you pushing your own bruise? What is that going to possibly do to, but that seems to be for a lot of people, the go-to is like, all right, let me just push harder on the thing. Let me just like try to shove the thing into a working condition. It never works. I try that all the time. I've had doctors, like if I have a, you know, when I've gone in for physicals and if there's like a boil or something I've been fucking with, and I've had doctors just say, don't touch it anymore. Just leave it alone. Like, you know, you shouldn't just let it be on its own. So I like that because I think that's a real, for me, that's one of my go-tos is like, oh, I'll just like get mad at myself for being mad at somebody else.
Well, you know, aggression is the one thing that I remember hearing Trungpa Rinpoche say is adharmic. That just will not get you started in a kind of path of integration or further intelligence or compassion. Aggression is the, you know, and that's why it's sort of circumscribed in a sense, and why you talk about things like ahimsa or nonviolence, you know, a fundamental approach of I'm not going to add that to this if I can possibly help it. It's not going to help.
Is aggression solely relegated to like anger or anger? And it's like aggression, like the babies of anger, or is it just, is aggression a thing that just shows up in all aspects of like how to deal with things? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, does it always indicate anger? Or can you have aggression minus anger?
Well, you know, all these words can be parsed. For example, there is the notion of enlightened anger, wrathful compassion, things like that. So
yeah,
it depends, I guess, on the motivation could be relevant. The quality of losing any kind of ground or sane reference point for what's happening, and just, like your computer dies and you throw it through the window because you're so frustrated with it. That's not going to fix the computer.
Right.
And it's not even going to make you feel better because it'll make you feel worse because now you go, I got to buy a brand new computer and I can't get the one ahead.
Oh, destroying your own equipment is the most, like, I've seen my hand smash down on a scanner once. I watched my hand like just pounding a printer. I don't know if you've ever gotten into a printer rage.
Printer rage? Is that a thing?
Have you ever had a printer rage?
I don't think so. What is it?
Oh my God. Of course you haven't.
No, printer. I mean, I'm totally capable of it. I'm not sure what it is. You mean if the printer's not working?
Okay, yeah. So printers are like, I think, very susceptible to malefic spirits or something. So if you print, if you're going to print something important, give your, like, before you go to a meeting or an audition, you need to give yourself like an hour, because it's going to run out of ink. It's just going to stop working for no, if you like don't have anything important, if you're just like printing out some bullshit, it'll work. But anytime I'm in a hurry to print, that's when it'll give me the low ink alert. And that, this is so off topic here.
Wait, but that, aggression and speed have a relationship. That's the point.
If
we're speedy, there's already some aggression brewing there, usually in the speed.
Whoa. Like if you're in a hurry.
If you're in a hurry, you're usually one step away from losing it.
Wow, you're right.
Right? It's almost like the smell of old Chinese food in your refrigerator. You just open the fridge, you know you got a problem. So speed is, that's why meditation, we literally slow down.
Wow.
Physically, you know, stillness and, you know, yeah, holding it steady for a minute, because speed is you know, going to give birth to aggression. And
wow,
it comes from a, usually fear, right? What makes us speedy, do you think?
Well, you know, a doctor friend of mine was telling me it's one of the people with PTSD, or it's one of the things, one of the symptoms is always being in a hurry. So
wow,
people who've had like trauma are the ones who like,
wow,
are always in a hurry.
They're accelerated in a way, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're
something
just like
accelerated us, you know, in that situation.
Yeah, they're, well, they're, you know, you're, it's like you're just trying, it's like you're running away from the moment of experiencing all that trauma. So the more you're in action, the more you're doing stuff, the more you've got your schedule filled up and you're moving and moving and moving and moving and moving, the less you have that thing that happens when you meditate, when you're not moving anymore, when you're staying still, which is you notice your tail again. I mean, that doctor didn't say that to me. That would just be my theory, is like people who are in a hurry will think to themselves, well, I'm in a hurry because I've got to get here, here, and there, and then that place in time. I don't want to be late because I don't want to seem like a jerk. But really, I don't know why I always do this. I always say people. When I'm in a hurry, who the fuck am I talking about? These mysterious people.
Yeah.
They're such assholes, David.
Yeah.
But when I've been, have you ever been in a hurry to get a massage?
I remember I was going to my Tai Chi class about 15 years ago, and I was in New York City, which is always puts you in that space. There's no place better than New York to experience what you're talking about.
Yeah.
As a normal vibe. Like literally people are walking faster in New York than anywhere else I've ever been.
Yes. Yes.
And I was in a cab going to my Tai Chi class, and there was a fire engine on the street in front of us. And it stopped right in front of us. So now I'm late. And on top of that, there's a fire engine with a siren going, and I'm stopped behind it. And I'm sitting there getting hotter and hotter and more frustrated. And then the irony of it struck me. It's like, I'm going to get there finally. What am I going to do? Move in slow motion.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Yeah, yeah, that. That's funny, right?
Rushing to the spa. You're rushing to you're just rushing to some non-event. You're rushing to get to a place. And so that, and I think about that a lot, like that thing in me, that thing that's in a hurry, or that thing, I had a key jiggling dad. Did you have a key jangling dad?
That's a good blues title too.
Key jangling dad.
My key jangling daddy.
Yeah, or a mom, there's key jangling moms. But like, so my dad, when he was in a hurry, like, you know, when you heard his keys, you would start hearing this like, you'd hear him grumble, and you had that, you better move. It's like a rattlesnake rattle, except it's his keys. Anyway, I have that in me, like that speedy hurry thing, even when there's no real.
Oh, Duncan, we all have it these days, you know.
Yeah.
It's part, and it's cultural too. Let's face it. It's a part of the whole milieu that we're in, is key jangling. America's is key jangling.
A key jangling country.
It is, and you know, and whatever that is, it's that also connects with materialism, interesting. So speed, aggression, and materialism all have some singular thread going through that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You can see
it. Yeah.
Is materialism, not material, but materialism is a quality of aggression?
Well, it has it in it because it's acquisitory. And if you're a proper materialist, you'll never be content. The one thing you'll never experience is contentment.
A proper materialist.
I mean, if you're really going to go with the theory of it, you couldn't possibly have enough.
Right.
Because you want bigger, like every company wants to get huge. You know, you talk to, well, not just Western anymore, but business people have divorced. We have divorced as a society the acquisition of wealth from the experience of an enriching presence and enjoyment and contentment. Those are not even connected to each other.
Wow, yeah.
Even the way that they entertain themselves, and I am saying they, because I think this is a pretty progressed mindset, is acquisitive, and you know it would have to be the next thing, the bigger thing, the more extraordinary thing, you know, the more pure thing, the more unusual thing, and the idea of sitting on a porch and just plunking on a banjo isn't included. You think that's a fool? Look at that fool, you know?
Yeah. Look at you on your fucking porch playing your shitty banjo, you dumb fuck. I have to go buy another racehorse. I mean,
don't you?
I'm in a hurry to buy a racehorse. Someone right now is in a hurry to buy a racehorse today. I bet $1 million. But so let's talk about this. Isn't that just a trick you're playing on yourself? Like, the trick is go something. It's like opening a box that has nothing in it. So somebody tells you if you go open that box, you're going to be much happier. And so you go and you open the box and there's nothing in it. And you say to the person, what the fuck? There's nothing in. I feel exactly the same way I felt prior to opening the box. But maybe when you're opening the box, there's this rush. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck's in here? What the fuck's in here? I got the box, finally. And then they're like, oh, no, I didn't mean that box. I meant the box that's like on top of that cliff on the side of that mountain. So now you're like, oh, yeah, of course, this is too easy to get. Then you're going up the mountain the whole time. You're like, oh, fuck. What if somebody gets to the box before me? Or holy shit. And then you get to that box. Same thing. You open it up. You're more excited this time, though, because it was more difficult to achieve. You know, and then inside that box is just a note with a map to another fucking box. And you keep doing this stupid game on yourself until you die. And it keeps you occupied, right? That's the idea. It just is a never-ending maze of empty boxes shaped like a threesome or like better ecstasy or, right? That's the idea. And they're all completely empty.
Well, and that's the idea of materialism, is that, no, that is, life is temporary and impermanent, so therefore those moments of satisfaction is the best we can do with it.
Right.
And then spiritual materialism, which we've talked about, which was a phrase that Trungpa Rinpoche coined, is the idea that through spiritual practice, quote unquote, you could achieve a more stable version of that kind of level of having acquired, you know, now... not just the perfect house, but the perfect state of mind.
Right.
In the perfect house.
Right.
In the perfect body.
And that would fly in the face of what we were talking about initially, the truth of suffering, which is it's not going to work. Like you're not going to get that in the sense that this suffering thing is baked in.
Well, so, wait a minute. Before baked in, though, then you're looking at if you can acknowledge that the thing is unsatisfactory, which is a pretty good word for dukkha, the first noble truth is dukkha. So unsatisfactoriness is almost the quality that you're not going to get real satisfaction. Then the question is what is causing that? So, and there's a couple of different roads on that. One, the most conventional one is attachment. You're too attached to the outcome, so therefore you are going to have to be disappointed at some point.
Right.
But the other one is fundamental bewilderment as to the nature of the experience that you're actually having. Profound ignorance. Deep,
okay.
Deeply embedded lack of clarity about the experience you're having, so that what you call suffering is a conditioned thing, but it's not necessarily from a perception of the actual experience. It's just the unfolding of experience in a context in which you have made certain decisions to solidify your relationship to the experience so that it comes out in a particular way.
Okay. I want to thank Shudder, who I worship and adore, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. This is where you go if you want to find actual horror movies. I say actual because I'm sure you're aware of the fact that when you're curling up with your lover, ready to get freaked out by some horror movie, the selection of horror movies on a lot of these streaming services suck so bad. When I was a kid and my dad had to go to work and play golf, he would leave me at an apartment in College Station, Texas, and he had a deal with the video store down the street that I could get anything I wanted as long as it wasn't porn. And so I just consumed the horror movies there because whoever ran that video store had an incredible taste in horror movies, and he had the real horror, the good stuff, the kind where the VHS tape smells like it's been sitting in a bad place. That's what Shudder is. The VHS might have smelled bad, but the movie is great. Right now, Shudder has got the original 1976 Carrie premiering September 1st. Poltergeist, they're here. Fucking Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978. Have you seen that one with Donald Sutherland? If you haven't, you need to watch it. It really weirdly resonates with the shit that's going on these days. And freaking Creepshow Season 3 is coming out September 23rd. Rob Schraub, who has directed 2 episodes of Creepshow, was just on this podcast. This is where you need to go if you want great horror. You can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for just $5.99 a month or $56.99 a year. They've got new supernatural terrors, edge-of-your-seat thrillers, and shocking horrors added every week. And they've got their own movies that they've been producing that are fucking great. Shudder, go there. You will love them. This is my go-to spot for horror, and I hope you'll make it your go-to spot too. To try Shudder free for 30 days, go to shudder.com, use promo code Duncan, that's shudder.com, 30 free days, go there, use promo code Duncan, please make me look good with them. My dream is to one day maybe get to be in a horror movie or make a horror movie for them. I love you, Shudder. Thanks for sponsoring my podcast. That is so okay. Let me try to work through that and simplify it a little bit if I can, because I'm trying to think of what that. I'm not going to simplify it at all. But I was reading a book about the fifth dimension, I believe, or the sixth dimension. The idea of, like, you know, if you could move through these dimensions, you, to some people it would look like you disappeared. In other words, if I'm going to point A to point B and I could go into this alternate dimension, it would look like I just blinked out of existence and teleported to this other place, right? And so people who saw that would be like, wow, holy shit, that's magic. But if you could do that, it would be as normal as, like,
taking an elevator, or just as normal as walking. So this kind of bewilderment, it's like that, but there's a piece of you in an alternate dimension that you're not willing to see, right? That, and that's what's fucking you up. In other words, like, is this the subconscious? This is the unacknowledged quality of your identity, or the unacknowledged part of your identity that is the thing that keeps touching the electric fence over and over and over again, but maybe hallucinating. Well, it's different forms for the identical fence. And then, do you know what, does that make sense? Is that too confusing?
You know, what I think you could bring all those dimensions together into, are they within the sphere of your awareness or not? Are you aware of that? So if you're talking about unconscious behavior where you're touching the electric fence over and over again without realizing it, that's because it's not within the sphere of your awareness. That's why we practice awareness as a whole thing. Why would you spend time becoming more aware? It doesn't make you richer. It doesn't make you a better guitar player. It just makes you more aware. But then there are fewer things that are just submarines. It's like cleaning out the submarines in your bathtub, you know?
No, wait, what do you mean cleaning out the submarines in your bathtub?
Getting attacked from below from things you're not conscious of, you're not aware of.
Oh, okay, you got a big bathtub, David. Mine.
I don't know. It was probably reaching, but you know, submarine attack is a big deal because you didn't know it was coming. That's why it's strategically a powerful thing. We don't see them, you know, until the missile is airborne.
Gotcha. You know what it is? It's the scanning mechanisms that we have to like look for asteroids or meteors coming to impact the planet, right? It's like expanding your consciousness enough to begin to see those like things
that incoming
bad luck. The stuff you're like, oh, I got really bad luck today. The idea is like, no, if you were a little bit more aware, you would have seen that days ago that was coming your way.
And ironically, you did see it.
Right.
And then you forgot.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
so that's an interesting twist, and that's something for everybody to contemplate on their own. Are we really unaware, or have we covered over that awareness?
Right. Yeah.
Because you know that, like, whenever you get into a mess, you go like, actually, I think I saw that coming, all of it.
Yeah.
But I was helpless, powerless to shift any aspect of it because the autopilot took over.
Vampires only go where they're invited.
You know what I mean? That's like the thing.
That's the old vamp. That's like you invite them in.
Wow.
So it's, you know, so like they, that's their tradition. Their custom is they can't, well, won't come in your house. And you're like, unless you're like, come on in, thing with fangs and a weird cape. Come on in. You want to come in? Of course I do. Or I've noticed sometimes in human relationships, a person will just, it'll just come out of them up front. You know what I mean? You'll be hanging out with a person and weirdly, like just kind of out of the blue, they might say something like, God, I just love stealing sometimes. And then, you know, a few months down the road, you're missing something from your house. You're like, holy shit. They literally just said it. And I decided to ignore that. That's a blunt example.
To ignore it. And how subtle that can get when you look back on your life and say, you know, I kind of did know that that person was whatever. I did know that heroin was not good for me.
I did know I should go to the doctor when my testicle got swollen up and I was looking at it in the mirror and thinking, you know, it kind of looks cool. Now I have one ball, David.
Oh, God. It's too... I mean, the beauty of the humor of it is, course, you know, we're crying through our tears, you know, it's like country music a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so just as far as going forward, you go, well, is there a way?
You mean laughing through your tears. Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. I think I meant crying through your laughter or laughing through your tears.
Okay. You said crying through your tears, which is like a really sad, great country music song.
Thank you for that edit. That's a good one.
Your tears are crying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So coming back to the suffering and the cause of suffering, because this is where, you know, we're trying to see, do we have I don't know, most of the people I talk to are trying to figure out life. Like, what's happening? Of course, day to day, you know, this happened and that happened. And then I, you know, my car got a flat tire on the way. I was supposed to drive into the city last week and my car got a flat tire the night before I was going to go. And I wanted to be there, but I didn't want to go on the train, blah, blah, blah. We're trying to figure out that level of stuff. But we're also trying to figure out what are we doing here in the first place. Most people I know, they're not just taking it like blasé, like, oh, I just go day to day. I don't know too many people like that. And you're trying to figure out what is the source code or the meaning of it or how to work with the whole situation. And one of the things that I don't know anybody these days who's my age who doesn't start thinking about the meaning of death more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, forget about one testicle. How about the whole damn body?
Yeah.
You're going to lose the whole damn body.
Which is also swelling up right now, to be honest. I need to lose some weight, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Wait, say that again?
I said my body's also swelling up right now.
It's fundamentally unreliable.
It is unreliable, yeah. But yeah, exactly. The reality of that situation when you're getting older is like you can't.
It's unreliable now, but it's easier to you can't. It's more unmistakable, you know, as you usually for most people as they age. But you know, a good 8-year-old Buddhist would understand this principle at 8 years old. And you know, it's just in the data, but it could happen any time that we're not. And that's why you say before you practice, there's called the four reminders. You remind yourself that this is a precious opportunity, precious human birth, and that karma is kind of going to cause things to happen in ways that are, you know, not exactly what you would hope for. And that this would be the time to introduce any kind of possibility of practicing something that will either lead to a better outcome overall or liberate you from the dilemma completely.
Yes.
It's kind of like that's pulling your car off the highway for a second, you know, that idea. It's like you're just for a second you're getting out of the entire insane square dance that society's doing, this sped up weird empty box opening hell ritual and everyone fighting over these empty boxes.
It's so graphic the way you're describing it. And it's, you know, I guess Buddhist teachers for centuries try to figure out good analogies and metaphors and allegories for expressing that, the empty box syndrome. And people should not confuse this with nihilism. You know, we talked about this a bunch of times, but this is not nihilistic. This is not saying, oh, there's no point in getting excited because your son comes home from school with an A on his report card and is so proud of himself. You should tell him, well, you're going to die anyhow. So what does that matter? You know, we talked about that when Forrest was just a baby, you know.
Yeah.
It's not nihilistic that way. It's just having a kind of, you're considering the possibility that slowing down might be part of a solution, at least for some of the time.
Yes.
That accelerating is not always the answer to every problem.
Especially when you're driving off a cliff.
Towards a cliff.
Or a wall.
Yeah.
Depending on how thick the wall is. Anyway, the point is the slowing down. Because, you know, I'm always practicing music these days. Just as something to keep my mind sharp, you know, still be learning something, get those neurons firing. And that the thing that has made me learn music the fastest is slowing down when I'm trying to play something. Not I don't know why, like I realized when I was in the early phases of this how I was always trying to do it really fast. And then you just cut it to half the time. Suddenly it's much easier, obviously. And the slowing down of just about, I can't think of anything that wouldn't benefit from slowing down. Sex. I mean, that's like nobody wants someone who's like a fast fuck.
Yeah, well, let's not make any ironclad rules for our friends out there. But
well, I'm not making iron clothes. You might be in a hurry. Whatever. You need to fuck
or
fast.
Like, you know, it's exciting or whatever. But
yeah, hey, look, hey, I'm the lord of fast fucks. Hey, if there was a fast fuck competition in the Olympics, I'd probably have gold medals all over my wall. I'm not knocking any. Again, when I say they, it's me. But yeah, okay. So yeah, fast and also like eating. You know what I mean? Like,
no doubt.
God, like eating, having a nice dinner, not being in a big rush, or most things, you know, most things, it's great.
Well,
to
and cultivating mindfulness as an art thrives with the slowing down of the tempo of something, especially at the beginning. Especially at the beginning. Now, and when you're talking about music, Duncan, that is universally recommended that you practice your scales slowly and you feel like the places in the scale where it's not really connecting properly, and you can do it slowly and evenly, then it's just a question of speeding it up for a faster tempo, but you never feel like you're playing fast, you know?
Right.
So that's great players. They look totally relaxed when they're playing fast.
Right.
Know? But that's because they practice slow.
Right. So, practice slow.
And mind, meditation, that's true. We got so much energy and you know, kind of inertia in our mind. That leaving, you know, a kind of more open space, we'll fill it with our inertia anyhow. But by adding the notion of fast results, that's probably kind of not counterindicated. Yeah, I want to get there faster. I want to get enlightened faster. You know,
yeah,
that's you already reproducing the causes of the confusion in the first place.
Chanting your mantra really fast.
Well, sometimes we do. Sometimes we do. There's a lot of nuance to all this.
I like the way it sounds whenever I've chanted Hare Krishna and I'm doing like machine gun Hare Krishna, like auctioneer chanting. I mean, it's got a cool sound to it.
Auctioneer chanting.
But you know, you do. I have had moments when I've been into mantra meditation where I realize like I am doing this really fast because I want to get it over with.
Oh, that's different. You know what I mean? Of course, that's something. But, you know, for example, I mean, Rinpoche used to say, you know, speed is a relative thing. So like, for example, a race car driver is going very slowly from their perspective. They're not freaking out at the tempo of the event.
Right.
It's everything's, you know, but if you're trying to introduce this idea of like, you know, parsing and moderation and seeing what's there, usually slower tempo is a really good idea.
Right.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be a slow fire person. You don't want to be a slow fireman. You don't want your doctor to be too slow. You don't want to be that slow when you're like doing the Heimlich maneuver.
Yeah, the Tai Chi Fire Brigade.
That's what you don't want. So there, obviously there's I love that idea of the race car driver to the race car driver, not fast enough, probably, you know, but that's a, you know. And also humans compared to rocks, man, we're going fast as fuck. Like the slowest human is faster than the slower human is faster than the slowest human is faster than the, you know, fastest rock.
Yeah, the shaman called them the rock people.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've felt that before around clusters of rocks.
But they might be moving at a tempo that's, you know, you're right, might be orders of magnitude slower.
Okay, so I'm sorry if I've spun my wheels a little too much in this concept of being in a hurry. I just am chronically in a hurry, and so I like breaking it down. And I like this connection to that being a quality of aggression. You know, like it's because there's the kind of hurry that I'm always in doesn't feel good. It's usually a poisonous hurry. It's usually has within it definitely the capacity for me to get completely pissed off for no reason at all at people who aren't moving at my speed, to judge them.
The mindfulness style of meditation is really good for that because you sit down, you've created space, you just take a breath, you take another breath. And then the key thing, I think if we're talking about ending suffering, removing the cause and condition of suffering, and if it's aggression, then the antidote is compassion.
Right.
Just flip when you're being aggressive to yourself to see if you can shift that towards kindness towards yourself. If you're about to be aggressive towards somebody else, see if you can shift that towards compassion towards that person. That alone undoes a fair amount of the causality of the whole situation.
Can you simultaneously be compassionate and be completely pissed off?
Yeah, it depends what you mean by pissed off. You could be, we're talking about sort of the enlightened aspect of anger would be you could be definitive in your no. And your no could be really strong, tough love, for example.
Right.
Your no could be really definitive and unshakable, but there doesn't have to be any aggression in it.
Right.
And that's called wrathful or, ruthless compassion, tough love, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I got to use the restroom. Hold on one second. Hold on a second. I guess this takes us right back to the fourth moment. Is that where compassion grows from?
You know, we always talk about first thought, best thought, right?
Yes.
We're sort of, I personally am rooted into maybe even the earliest stage of my studies with Drunk Rinpoche in the early 70s, which was significant in terms of time and place and what was happening then and how things were getting connected up. But I consider some of the things he said as kind of those old 45 records that are kind of Motown. And they're vintage and, so there's about 10 things, that are in heavy rotation. One is first thought, best thought.
Yeah.
So you asked me about compassion. I looked up at my property here at Long Island and they planted some ferns, which cover situation. And they're seasonal. So during the winter, they just disappear. And then every year, they don't have to add more. They just water the seasons, everything comes up. And now it's ground cover again. And I think compassion is like that. It's always there. It kind of can pop up and sprout out anywhere because it's part of the fundamental, as much as suffering is part of the fundamental texture of existence, compassion is, and maybe more so.
Whoa. Probably more so. I've never heard that before.
Me neither.
Wow.
Me neither. I think it's part of the fabric of reality, compassion. It's not a miracle. It's not a special sauce. It's part of the fabric. Look at the way children come in. Look at how we, look at how we fall in love. Look at how we love, food and color and experience.
Yeah.
I think and deeply we want to love ourselves. I think that you can't find a person who doesn't really, truly in their heart want to love themselves.
Right.
And, so I think it's part of the fabric and then it sprouts and you want to water it. That's what practice is. You want to water it.
Wow. That is beautiful.
Does it make sense?
Oh yeah. It's so sweet. It's so in all the going over and over and over again, the qualities of compassion, the form or the qualities of suffering, the forms of suffering, aggression and all the children of suffering. Or all the things that suffering is puked on or whatever. It's so cool to imagine this other thing that is just there, not like an additive, not like a sweetener or something that you have to like cook up and put in. Meaning you don't have to spend so much time looking for it. You don't have to,
Well, in terms of cause and conditions, we would say, and by we, I mean 2,500 years of Buddhist people, or people, examining that perspective, that this suffering is causal. It has causes and conditions and is impermanent by nature and also fundamentally insubstantial. It does not have permanent existence anywhere, anytime, any place. It's just part of brought about by causes and conditions. And when you remove those causes and conditions, you remove the suffering. And that, in fact, the wakeful quality of mind and the compassionate aspect of mind have no causes and conditions.
That is so cool.
It's so optimistic, isn't it?
Best one yet.
Wow. That is it. That is the best one. I can't believe it. That's so cool.
That is so cool.
We have to find out. That's, you know, that's me talking from a, you know, you could say what I learned or what I studied, but I would say there's a certain amount of personal experience that would back that up, that, you know, when you grind down and you see what people are really made of, it's pretty hard to destroy that part of their nature. But the other parts can take over completely, like just like the weeds could take over my fern garden.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't see a fern for miles. You know what I mean? That's, we got to be realistic that way. That happens.
That is so cool.
I don't know why it just clicked. All this, man. I've gotten so bored in different ways hearing people talk about compassion, but that's the first time it really clicked. Now I get when you were saying empty. When you were, I don't know if it was off. It was off mic. We were talking about compassion. Emptiness kind of being the same thing.
Yeah. Well, if it's solid and thick and programmable and so forth, it has the same texture as the rest of the conditioned situation. And it may be a better outcome, even if that's the way you're doing it. Oh, I'm going to program myself to be kinder and more considerate and better mannered person. That may not be the worst thing in the world. But
right.
the fundamental nature of it is more deeply rooted than that. As far as I can tell.
Fundamental goodness and compassion, are these two things the same thing? Is compassion another word for fundamental goodness?
Well, fundamental goodness, you know, if you want to get into it, it would probably include the idea of a crystalline wakefulness, you know, a kind of sharp, clear mind, and that is imbued with compassionate, connective energy with everything it touches. So, you know, it might be two aspects, but maybe at some point it's really the same source code.
Is this a faith-based thing? If you're covered in the weeds of suffering, is this the kind of thing where, like, there's a little bit of faith here where you hear someone like you or Chogyam Trungpa saying a thing like this, and even though you're just completely coiled up by the anaconda of materialism and suffering, you can get this little spark of like, holy shit, that's a possibility. That's underneath all this garbage. That's underneath all the muck.
You know, again, first thought, best thought, I thought, it's ear whispered. It's like the anaconda is wrapped around you, but still somebody, your ear is open and somebody whispers something into your ear.
Wow.
You know, so I don't think it's blind faith, for sure.
That's so cool.
It's not like you're going to be okay. Take my word for it.
Hey, David, I didn't know you could ear whisper on a podcast.
Yeah. Well, they have horse whispers, right, and things like that. Is this sort of similar? Can you get through to the person's inner ear?
Wow.
And, you know, that's teachers cool. have to learn how to do that, because shouting is not always going to be the way you reach people.
If only
that were true.
If it was just a volume problem.
Wow. That's so cool. I'm sorry. If people are listening, like, what the fuck are you so excited about? That's obvious. I'm a very slow learner, man. And that is really cool.
Well, and you know, if people want to find a road, a route, there's actually a physical area of energy around the physical heart center. And I find sometimes with compassion practice, it's better to drop your attention into that area of your body, because your head will parse and debate.
Yeah.
And, you know, but your heart, you know, like if you love somebody, you can feel them in your heart center.
Yeah.
Like your kid or something like that. That's where you're going to have that experience that we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's what really Ram Dass was talking about, I think.
Right.
You know, the heart, it's a physical center for what we're talking about. And it's also, guess what? When we say citta in Sanskrit for mind, it's in the heart center. Consciousness is seated in the heart center. Now, the brain is considered an important organ. I mean, you wouldn't want to be walking around without one.
No.
Right? But Your heart is probably more fundamental in some way.
Hmm. Yeah. That is so cool, man. It's so good to hear. I mean, it's just so great to hear because you, it's so easy to kind of like get caught up in compassion as like a sort of abdominal workout or something, you know, like you hear all the compassion exercises or building, developing, cultivating compassion, which I get. And in your example, it does involve a kind of cultivation. I could see that. It's like, but it's also sort of, we've all seen like a field in the middle of winter. And that is not quite as unnerving as the dead heart field illusion that can happen to a person where you're sort of, you're like, oh, I'm never going to feel anything in that place again. Or I don't want to ever feel anything in my heart again. You know, it's a quality of many of loss or something, you know, bitterness. You just sort of
grief.
You ice down because it's like you can't survive. You feel like you can't possibly survive in the world with your heart crushed
And you're vulnerable. If you get into compassion, you become very vulnerable, you know, to really feeling pain, yours and other people's pain and suffering. And there are stories about, you know, I remember a story about His Holiness Karmapa, who was the head of the Kagyu lineage, 16th Karmapa, who was an amazing being and a great, great teacher that we were lucky enough to spend time with. Very unusual, unusually magnanimous, you know, just from sort of conventional terms, just really generous, beaming, kind of like kind-hearted and very, you know, very present energy. And they said he went to Hong Kong, they checked into a hotel, and he's out on the terrace just looking out, and he just starts to cry because all those beings are suffering and they don't have a shred of Dharma. They don't have any possibility of working with it in some kind of way. So I think you would have a broken heart. You know, if you develop compassion, you're going to be more sensitive and you're going to feel more vulnerable more of the time. That's what we call the warrior's path, Duncan. That's what it is. It has nothing to do with beating people up.
All right. Yeah, that's cool. David, thank you so much. That was a really great ear whisper. I love it. It's so cool. Such a trippy idea. For some reason, it doesn't show up as, at least in my, or I guess I haven't listened well enough, but the idea that it's like unconditioned. I've heard that so many times. It just never got through. But suffering is a byproduct of, wow, man, that's great. I always know it's been a good podcast if I'm stammering at the end of it. Thank you. And, you know, folks, David, as you've heard me say infinitely by now, if you saw the Midnight Gospel, you've seen David as Clancy's meditation teacher. One of the things Clancy and I share is the same meditation teacher. You got another course coming up, and so I want people to hear about it, if you don't mind.
Well, and then the nice thing is because if this is a podcast that seems to be appearing soon on Wednesday, September 22nd, you, Duncan, are going to visit us at Dharma Moon.
Yes.
And we're going to have a kind of joint presentation about the upcoming courses and also just doing more of what we do all the time anyhow, which is talk about stuff in the Dharma. And also some time maybe for the people to participate in that. And the two programs that are coming up are a teacher training program, which quite a few of your what should I call them? What do you call your people?
My family.
Your family. Okay. Quite a few of your family have taken this training. And we just finished one last night. And people were it's a very happy thing because in COVID, in this environment, we have connected virtually and people are actually able to share their hearts in these programs in ways that I would not have imagined possible when we started doing it online.
Well, look, you know, I just think people listening to this, you got it. David and I have been having these conversations for God knows how long, honestly, probably millennia at this point. But you just see how you need that. Like if you're interested in this sort of thing, there's a real I don't know. I don't want to do some telethon over here, but it, I like, anytime I have these wonderful conversations with you, and it's cool that we can record some of them, you just realize it's like, this is not like, it's as simple can be, but the thing is so weird. You just need someone to like help ear whisper you a little bit. You know, it just isn't.
And training.
Training.
So we have one course coming up, which is the Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Training, which starts October 15th. And then we have one course that's a kind of full course. That's a four-month training, and that's a deeper dive for folks. But we have a Foundations of Mindfulness course, which is starts Thursday, September 23rd. That's just four Thursday nights of just getting into some of the fundamentals. That might be right for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So between those two, we're going to talk about them a little bit. You can go to dharmamoon.com. And then right at the top, just go to the info session or click onto any of the programs you want to learn more about. But right at the top is the trailer for the info session. You click on it, it's free. And Duncan and I will both be there Wednesday, September 22nd, dharmamoon.com. We have a great group of people gathering. I'm completely inspired these days by who's showing up for this. And I think we've overcome the obstacle of not being able to gather physically, where there's a kind of definitely a community vibe that's evolving, and it is in parallel to the Duncan family, and there's a lot of crosstalk there, which is special and delightful, Duncan, as I keep saying.
Thank you.
They are wonderful. David, thank you so much. I will be seeing you on Wednesday next week. Can't wait. Can't wait to start doing these in person again, man. I saw Susan from Salma Rasa the other night. It was so cool. And just, David and I used to do these, you know, in person. It was the best. Oh, I took it for granted. Oh, I took it everything for granted back then. But you know what? The remote stuff, it's what we've got. So what else are you going to do?
Well, and you know, the beauty is people gather from all over the world. The course last night, there were people in Japan, Australia, South America.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to travel across the country to go to the thing. So that's cool.
But we'll do both. We'll do both, right, Duncan? Coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh god, yeah. I can't wait for that whenever it is.
Okay. Thank you, David. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan.
That was David Nichter, and everybody, all the links you need to get to his teacher training will be at DougAtrussell.com. A tremendous thank you to all of our sponsors, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. It's a two-episode week. Got some great guests coming up. Until then, Hare Krishna.